with Jessica.
And Mickey.
What up? Oh my God. So there's a lot that I haven't seen. There's a lot that I've seen. And it's funny because I feel like there was like a resurgence probably after the strike of like all these horror movies. And I haven't seen any of them. And so I haven't seen Late Night with the Devil. I haven't seen Immaculate. I haven't seen The First Omen, and I haven't seen Abigail. That's like four movies that I feel like I should have seen that I haven't. I haven't seen any of them. But it's weird because I've heard about a lot of them, especially Late Night with the Devil, and I've heard a lot of mixed things. Some people are saying it's like so fucking good, it's really scary, and then other people are saying it's not good, or they're using AI too much. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait until all the hype around these movies dies down, and then I'll watch them all.
Could do that, or you could wait until I talk about Late Night with the Devil and you'll go, oh, you know what, you're right, and I'll go watch it right now.
Oh, interesting. Okay, interesting. But with the movie I did see, some of the movies I did see Civil War, which I really like Alex Garland. Did you see it?
Nope.
Did we? No. Okay, interesting. I waited on this one too. And I am actually like a really big fan of Alex Garland. I love Ex Machina. I love Debs. And so I was really interested in seeing this. And it's an interesting feeling because I saw it and now I'm like, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about it yet. And I'm still like replaying certain parts that I really liked in it and that other things that I felt were really annoying. Like on one side, it's very clever. And you know, from living in California, this is a real thing that happened where in 2019, there was a movement for California to secede from the United States. And so I feel like Alex Garland wrote this during the pandemic when like all this stuff was going around, and it's like a sci-fi on like, what if that happened? And Texas obviously did secede from the United States, you know, forever ago. And that those two states themselves could be a self-sustaining part, like a country themselves. Like it's totally believable, at least to me. I will say it looks beautiful. Everything about it is like amazingly shot. Everyone in it is great. Kirsten Dunst. I will say the ending is like super predictable, which is a little annoying, but I feel like it's just like a part of how I find him annoying. Like I like everything he did. I think the movie is great, but it is like super annoying. And also it's very ambivalent, which I feel like some people were calling him a coward to do that, but like I felt like that was the whole point of the movie.
That's what
like
I heard.
When you're a war journalist, you're the whole point is to be ambivalent, and so which is hard. So I do feel like, you know, that he wasn't being a coward, that was like the main point of the movie.
Right.
But he also gave a footage credit to a right-wing journalist. Some call him a neo-Nazi, which they were probably true, but that is a little disappointing and annoying, only because like, and to some people defending it, yeah, you have to give a footage credit if you take their footage because then they will sue you. On the other hand, it's like there are tons of journalists out there, literally anyone else you could have gotten that footage from or any footage from, and instead you used him and then put him in a credit in the movie, and a bunch of people found out and now they feel like, you know, like what game are you playing at here? So I don't know how I feel about that either. But that's to say it's totally worth seeing on the big screen. I did like it. It is thought provoking in a way. Kind of cool. The other things that I've seen that like are recent, and I don't know if you heard all the hype behind Baby Reindeer.
No, bear in mind that we also missed out a month. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we have to catch up on. But, you know, I have heard of Baby Reindeer, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, so Baby Reindeer is a short series that came out on Netflix. Episodes about half an hour long. It's like the first thing I've seen in a long time that I felt like was really good.
Really?
And I probably caught it like a day before the hype dropped, and which I'm lucky because, you know, a friend of mine who like never posts about stuff was like, this fucking blew my mind. And I was like, okay, interesting. Like, I'll watch it. And I ended up watching it all. And it's emotionally devastating. Like, I don't think I've seen something like this in a while where it, like, it talks about, like, rape trauma, especially from a male perspective. And it talks about stalking, and it talks about obsession, and it talks about, like, mental health in a way that's, like, very clever and very funny. And it doesn't try to solve anything, which I really like. It's just kind of talking about, like, the different emotional responses that you have from all this going on in your life. I fucking loved it. It's great. It's really well done. It's perfectly acted. It's like very emotional, and like some of the episodes are really hard subject matter to get through, and then you are kind of rewarded with these like really funny moments afterwards. I honestly loved it. I really did. The soundtrack is good. Like it's a really great piece of work, and I'm really glad it came out, because I don't think I've felt that I've loved anything in a long time. And then I've also watched Shogun, which you might have heard about. It's the remake of the Shogun, you know, from the 80s. Yeah. And then it was also a book. It's pretty well done. I think, like, for me, I felt like every episode was anticlimactic until the end. And then you're like, oh, okay, here's where the storyline is going off. And then the finale comes and it, like, wraps it all up in a pretty little bow. And for me, I was, like, very disappointed.
Okay.
I did really like it. Like, a lot of people, like, watched the first episode. I had, like, maybe I had 3 messages of people being like, you need to watch this. Oh, my God, you'd love it. And I did really like it, but I did feel like it was just too neat and clean at the end, and I didn't really like the pretty bow that it put on it. And then I watched Fallout, which is another new thing based on the video game.
I haven't watched it yet, and that's actually one that I do want to watch.
Did you ever play it? Or
I go back with Fallout from the 90s, like back with, like, Fallout 1 and 2 came out in the 90s for the Mac and PC. That's what I
had. Uh-huh.
And so when Fallout 3 came out on Xbox 360, I was like, and all these people were getting excited about it, I was like, oh, you guys have no idea. Like, Fallout is probably as far as game franchises, it's easily my favorite. I do want to see the show. Like, the show, I was like, oh, I like Walt Goggins. I love Kyle MacLachlan. I'm a fan of Fallout. I was like, I haven't seen it yet, so I will take your next comments to heart. So if you liked it.
I mean, I didn't know anything about the game. So I'll say I really liked it. It for me, like, as a person that's never played or heard of it or anything like that, it was like a mashup between Blast from the Past, the movie with Brendan Fraser, and Resident Evil and Mad Max.
Okay.
Which is, like, it's funny. It's good. It's a little silly. Well, I liked the ending a lot.
I was going to say that, like, so my brother and I had this conversation back. I was, you know, one of the reasons why we haven't been on in a while, I went to Ireland to see my brother, who's, you know, graduated from Trinity. Yay. But he and I were talking because he got into Fallout from you know, in Fallout 3 and all that, Fallout, you know, 4 and New Vegas and all that stuff. But one of the things we were talking about was, like, how one of the great things about the Fallout games, specifically the original ones for me, like the first two, is that the game is, that was the first time I ever heard of the phrase Easter egg. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, in the first two games, like, you're basically traveling across this map. It's like, you know, I can't remember how do you describe the view of, it's like, it's kind of like top down, you know, third person, top down. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh yeah. Okay.
You're isometric, I think, but you're traveling, and sometimes it'll randomly generate an encounter that happens in the game, you know? And, like, for example, one of them is, like, one of the encounters, you'll just come across a dead whale and a potted plant, a flower next to it in a pot. That's a reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Another one, they make Star Trek references. They make references to TV shows like Red Dwarf. There's literally Mad Max references. There is one part in Fallout 2 where you're fighting a gang and the leader's name is V'ger. That was the alien probe in Star Trek, the motion picture. It's like, it's, so mm-hmm. game, it's like, there's a part where, like, so in the later Fallout games, they'll find, I think it's in part 3. Maybe it's in, yeah, I think it's in part 3. You'll find as you're walking across this, like, desert wasteland, sometimes you'll find a fridge. And when you open the fridge, you'll see a skeleton wearing a fedora, which is a reference to Indiana Jones. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the games have always kind of dealt with, like, you know, the whole thing is about, like, kind of like nuclear war and what happens, and but they always has that sense of that cheeky sense of humor. So I definitely feel like the show, by what you're describing, is like, yeah, that sounds like the fucking the game, you know?
It's the yeah, one, no, it was. I mean, it's fun. Walter Goggins is the best part of it, but how can he not be the best part of it? I mean, that's just kind of what it is.
Looking great.
I think you would like it then. I heard a lot of good things from, like, gamer people who watched it and was like, it's the best.
Okay, good.
And then, like, I watched Strange Way of Life, the Aldo Why am I retarded? Pedro Pascal and Ethan Hawke. Wait, is that? Yeah. The short story where they play gay cowboys.
Oh, cool.
The short. It's good. It's like, I watched it and I was like, there was no reason for this besides gay baiting with two, one straight actor. But it was good. I feel like it would have been better with a little more storyline behind it. Someone was like, oh, it's horny. And I was like, it's not that horny at all. But I do appreciate a gay cowboy story. So it's like a half an hour long, maybe 45 minutes. It was good. It finally released on Netflix. It was made, I think, a few years ago. And then it finally released on Netflix. And then what else did I watch that's new? Oh, actually, so these are the older films that I watched. So I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a film called Kiss of the Spider Woman.
William Hurt and Raul Julia.
Yeah, wow. Like, I had never seen it before. I, like, didn't even hear about it, and I caught it, and I was, like, blown away.
Where'd you catch it? Because it's not, I can't find it streaming.
Oh, no, it's not streaming. I had to download it. Someone told me about it, and I had to steal it from the internet, which, you know, a cycle goes, and then it ends up on streaming. I did this, like, a few months back with The Abyss, because that wasn't anywhere, and now it's on Hulu. You know, like, there's just some movies that make the rounds, but this one, I someone told me about it. They were like, I think you should watch it. You'd really like it. And I downloaded it and I was like blown away about how much I liked it. And it's strange because, you know, you hear a lot of stuff about William Hurt and he was great in it. And Raul Julia was great in it. And it was like touching and fucking sad. And like, it, you know, it's these two men in prison during like this political war. And one of them is a gay man who's in prison for hooking up with a minor, which is very strange. But you get over it because the form of relationship and a weird, strange bond. And I honestly really loved it.
My mom was a
fan. If you know how to download movies, then I would find it.
Yeah.
And then I saw... And I've totally forgot this existed, but Stewart Saves His Family and the character Stewart from like the 90s SNL, Al Franken. This is so funny because I've never seen the movie, but I remembered his character from, you know, that time in SNL. So I watched it. Vincent D'Onofrio's in it. And it's weird to see him not kind of play a psychopath, I think. He plays like the brother and, you know, Stewart is on a mission to kind of save his family from being pieces of shit, which you will, you know, like, and it's like his gentle influence in the movie that kind of like saves them from going off the deep end of being like worse people than they should be, if you will. But I really liked it. I can see why it didn't really go far or maybe like kind of went back into obscurity, but it was kind of funny like watching it. I totally forgot about that character too until like, you know, you see the still and you're like, oh yeah, he's the mirror guy, you know, when he's talking into him about like, you know, he's good enough and like, yeah. And then I watched Fire Walk With Me, which I don't think I've ever seen. I've obviously seen, Twin Peaks, you know, and I still haven't seen the new Twin Peaks. So someone was like, you should watch the movie before you dive into the new series.
Yep.
Which I did, and like it's so funny because like obviously I have a lot of respect for David Lynch, but I think the more people put him on a pedestal, the more critical I am of everything he does. Which I think I'm just like that with any authority figure, which I do see him as a film authority figure. So the whole first part with like Chris Isaac and him, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Sure, and I think a lot of people did. I feel like a lot of people who have critiques about that film a lot of it centers around I'll explain why that all that is brilliant and works, but keep going.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be a good conversation. Cause I was like, I felt like it was weird and very grandiose of Lynch to put himself in that position. I will say like, it took me a while to like get back into the vibe that it brings, the like creepy, hypersexual, like weird, supernaturalish vibe that comes with Twin Peaks. And I did like it, but there are some parts, because some parts are like so cool and like gross and sexy. And then other parts, I'm just like, I'm just going to put this on mute for a second and let this part ride and then come back to it. Like, I don't know. So that's how I felt about it. But
the weird thing is you're not in the minority. Like when that movie played at Cannes, it got booed, you know?
Yeah.
and I think that everybody's fucking crazy because I think I honestly hold it up there as one of the most terrifying films I've ever seen. Also incredibly sad. But anyway, the whole beginning with Chris Isaac and Kiefer Sutherland. Okay, so if you watch the original TV show Twin Peaks, right? It's,
yeah,
you know, FBI, charming, eccentric FBI agent shows up, ends up befriending the local law, and they work together to kind of find this killer. It's the exact opposite. The beginning of Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, is the exact, Chris Isaac shows up, and he's already immediately like everybody is an opposite of their has a counterpart in the original show. Chris Isaac's counterpart is obviously Kyle MacLachlan. I want to say Kiefer Sutherland's counterpart is Miguel Ferrer, who Miguel Ferrer, the forensics guy in the show, is an asshole. Mm-hmm. I mean, we end up loving him, but he's still an asshole. Whereas Kiefer Sutherland's like this nervous, kind of nebbish, like awkward. The sheriff of the town where Teresa Banks is murdered is the exact opposite of Sheriff Truman. It's basically opposites. And I feel like I feel like on one hand, it's an interesting juxtaposition. On the other hand, I also think David Lynch is trolling audiences, which I think I kind of love.
Yeah. Okay. The vibe I got. And I was like, he's doing this on purpose.
And I love Chris Isaac in that. And I also, my favorite part of that whole beginning sequence, though, is Harry Dean Stanton, who's just this guy who runs a trailer park who just wants to be left alone. if you like that character, as brief as he is on screen, he shows up in the return, the new series. And I think I get why whoever told you to watch this before you watch the new series. Makes sense. If you don't like Firewalk Me, there's a huge chance you're not going to like The Return. Because people forget that David Lynch only directed a handful of the episodes of the original Twin Peaks, you know? A lot of it was other writers and other directors and other writers were behind it. So I think, Twin Peaks is my favorite show. I've got the fucking Bookhouse Boys tattoo right here, you know, all that jazz. Mm-hmm. When the show kind of becomes cute, and I mean that in the best way, because I love the show. I love even the stuff that people hated in the original series. I love it. But where it kind of becomes like, Twin Peaks, what a great place to visit, you know? Like, he takes that, he goes back to, like, he reminds you in Firewalk With Me, he's like, no, this story's dark. At the heart of it, it is a young woman who had a very troubled life and ended up being sexually assaulted by someone close to her and the trauma that goes with that. You know?
Yeah.
I remember seeing Fire Walk With Me. I mean, I watched a lot, but I remember going to see Fire Walk With Me at a screening here in LA. I can't remember where it was. It was somewhere downtown. And I remember they had the guy who played Bobby, the guy who played Mike. Mike is not the little guy, let me rephrase. Bobby, no, so he's only in the movie for like a split second, but he's in the show as a much bigger part. But there's a character, there's a character named Bobby Briggs. It's Lara's boyfriend, right? And he's got a buddy named Mike, who's like the blonde guy, who's like kind of like his...
Oh, yeah. Okay,
they had him there. And I was like, that's a weird person to have for a Q&A, because he's not really a part of Fire Walk With Me. He's in it. I'm not arguing that.
Yeah.
But then also, as was a surprise guest, they had Cheryl Lee. And I'm like, well, there you go. I mean, that's who people are going to want to talk to. And of course, I felt bad that nobody was like, you know, addressing any questions to Mike. I was going to raise my hand and make a reference to the show, like kind of like a joke, just to kind of be like, you know, whatever. And I was about to, and then this other woman raised her hand, and, you know, they called her, and she was like, you know, I was a victim of sexual abuse from a family member, and this movie helped me reconcile that and get it. So I want to thank, and it was like this like really touching moment where I was like, well,
you're like, never mind. Right. My joke is stupid. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do really love Fire Walk With Me. I really, there's parts of the return that kind of dive a little bit harder, deeper into some of the moments that happen in Fire Walk With Me that I wish they hadn't, because as it stands, I think some of the moments in Fire Walk With Me are terrifying without having any sort of like explanation or anything like that. But when you see the return, you go, oh, that's where he was going with that. It's pretty cool. I really enjoy that movie. It scares the hell out of me. And I don't feel like I don't scare easily anymore, but that movie just, it's
haunting.
It's a master of sound design. And, you know, the acting is like, there's moments that are just so, like, there's a dinner table sequence between where they're, you know, she's got dirt on her fingernails, and it's like, and Ray Wise is her father, is just like, really like, just, oh my God, it's so.
I know. I remember that. Cause you're like, this is so cringy in a way like that. I can almost can't stand it. But like, you obviously are very enthralled.
And I think a lot of people were upset with the movie because they were like, where's the fun quirkiness of the show? And it's like, no, it's not here. This is like darker. I like that. And that, and some of my favorite episodes of Twin Peaks are some of the more terrifying, more serious, more darker, like the whole, you know, Bob, the killer Bob stuff is my favorite stuff. But like, that show, more than any other show in television, has scared the shit out of me before. So anyway, that being said, if you weren't a big fan about it, maybe hold off on the return for a while until, you know, you kind of get, because they really do like the Twin Peaks, the return. And again, I loved it. Is a 17-18 hour David Lynch film. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not treated like a TV show. We don't have the episode ends on the what now? Whoa. Or this happened. Or this person says this one line. It's like, gotta stay tuned next week to see what it's like. It literally, well, there's moments where it just ends. You know, you're like, okay. I think it's meant to be watched.
You're like, okay. Yeah.
I think it's meant to be watched as a 17-18 hour film. My buddy Steve, who's been on the podcast before, we watched it every week religiously. We would make coffee milkshakes and we'd watch Twin Peaks, which is, I think, why we gained so much weight. But also, the dream was, before he moved, it was like, hey, man, someday we're going to sit down, we're going to do this show properly, and we're going to watch it as the 17-18 hour, whatever, however long, very few bathroom breaks, you know, we're just going to sit and we're going to binge it in one sitting. But yeah, so I really like it. But yeah, Fire Walk With Me, I love that movie. But anyway, I get it. So sorry.
No, that's good, because that's kind of the gist of what I watched. I mean, there's some other stuff, but it's definitely not worth mentioning. What about you?
Okay, well, I'll start with some of the older stuff, and then I'll move up to the, you know, I'll be quick because, you know, it was a lot. So my birthday marathon that I have every year, this year it was Friday 13th Part 4, Straitjacket, starring Joan Crawford, Abby, which was the Black Exorcist ripoff.
Okay, I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
It's great. Death Game and Sleepaway Camp was the headliner, right? So that was my birthday marathon.
Nice.
My favorite things about Sleepaway Camp, I'm not going to spoil anything. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, fucking watch it. But a friend of mine came and he had never seen it. This is one of my friends from high school. He hadn't seen it. He was high. He was drunk. And then the twist happened and he was just, I heard him in the behind me going, what the fuck? I was like, I remember thinking, if I could only go and see the movie through your eyes, I would be happy.
Yeah.
And then on the plane to Ireland, literally a day after the eclipse, which I went and saw in a border of Illinois and Indiana. It was fucking fantastic. It was awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was. I watched a movie called Bloody Birthday. That was an 80s film about kids who were born on the day of eclipse, and then when they get to be, I think their birthday, they
very fitting. Did you plan it?
No. Okay. I bought it. I got it was like Arrow was doing like a sale on iTunes, and I was like, oh, I've always wanted to see this movie, and so it was like $3. I bought it, and then I was on a plane. And I was just like, oh, I might as well. I have got 8 hours to fucking kill, so I watched Bloody Birthday, and I was like, and I didn't. The funny thing is, I didn't even process the eclipse part until after the fact. I was like, oh yeah, there was an eclipse yesterday. So I rewatched Bloody Birthday. I rewatched a movie that I had actually had at a marathon years ago that you were at, but you hadn't come until afterwards. I think I was the only person at this point who watched the movie. It was a movie, one of my favorites, though. It's called Brother from Another Planet.
I watched it at your house, and then I watched it again. And so because it's Cine Family back in the day, it's now Braindead Studios, they did a whole series of movies like that. And I had a shirt that I bought from that series, and it's a Brother from Another Planet shirt.
I still have that shirt. My drawer.
No, yeah, I do too. And so, no, I've definitely rewatched it since you showed it, because I remember seeing parts of it there, and I was like, I gotta see this. It's fucking awesome.
I really can't speak highly enough about that movie. It's just such a wonderful piece of work that I don't know. I feel like everybody. Anyway, I rewatched that, and then anyway.
Yeah, it stars the guy from Terminator 2.
Joe Martin.
Yeah. So, and I always, because you know, I saw Terminator 2 as a kid, and then later on, didn't see until you showed it, A Blur Through Another Planet.
Yeah.
And then I was like, holy shit, it's the guy from Terminator 2. But no, such a fun, good, poignant kind of movie. I really like it.
It really is. Yeah. I can't speak enough about it. So I watched those, and then I watched, I'm trying to think of what I watched on the way back. I can't remember. But anyway, I am. So it was a birthday marathon. There's movies that I watched for that. And then I watched Somebody's Watching Me, which is what someone's watching me. I think someone or somebody. It's the John Carpenter TV movie he made that it was just kind of, it kind of always eluded me. It was made in the 70s. It was made right before, I think came out right before Halloween came out. And it's good. It's where he met Adrienne Barbeau, who he would later marry for, and then, you know, for, you know, years, and they worked together and they divorced and, you know,
yeah.
But they met on this working on this film. And it's good. It's pretty clever. It's just as a completist, I wanted to see it, you know. And then I went to the movies, surprisingly, and it's tough because, like you, there was movies that like I was like I really want to see this, but right before my trip, and everything is so crazy and hectic, I was like, for example, I was like, there was one night where I was like, I want to see two movies. I want to see Late Night with the Devil, and I want to see Immaculate. In a perfect world, I would just go to the movies and just go to both.
See both of them, yeah.
But it wasn't a perfect world. I didn't have the time, so I had to pick one. And I was like, well, I've been waiting for Late Night with the Devil for over a year now. I like David Demolition a lot. Like, a lot.
Is that how you say his name? Demolition? I was like, how the fuck do you say his last name? Okay, I do too. I like him.
I like him a lot. And I like that he was so, this was like a kind of a passion project for him. So he's like, you know what? I know this is going to play in Shudder in a few weeks, but I want to see it now just so I can be like, I can be part of that box office, you know?
Yeah.
So, I loved it. I will say this. I had some because I loved it, I had some nitpicks with it because I was like, there's just a few things I just wish could have been done a little bit differently. And here's my problem.
Yeah.
First off, okay. The acting is dynamite. I'm like, everybody, it is a nice contained film, you know, one location, really great. And I love the idea of like, we're getting to see the Halloween episode of a 70s car Tonight Show type show where things go horribly wrong, and there's characters in that that are based off of real people that existed. There was like a psychic on the show in the movie that's based off of Uri Geller, who was famous because he would bend spoons. He went on the Carson show. Carson thought he was a phony, so he reached out to James Randi. James Randi being the you know, kind of a world famous skeptic who had that. He was the one who originally offered $1 million to anybody who could prove without.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And James Randi would debunk all these different people, like these like phony psychics and everything. And he told Carson, he's like, well, if he's going to do the bending the spoon trick on The Tonight Show, don't let him provide his own silverware. Provide your own. And of course, on the show, when they did that, Uri Geller realizes it and he kind of hovers his hand over he's like, oh, I'm just not feeling it today. You know what I mean? So there's a character. There's a character that's based off of Uri Geller and there's a character that's based on James Randi, and they're both in this movie. And so like, it's, you don't need to know that to like enjoy it, but it's just, it's nice if you go, oh, I know the historical people. These are based.
Yeah. Of these. Yeah. Characters.
These proxy characters. Yeah. So, the only problem I have with Late Night with the Devil is this, is that the movie goes, so you're watching the show and then, you know, David Demolition will look at the camera and be like, you know, we'll be right back after this message or these commercials. And then the idea is we'll just be going to see behind the scenes. So the camera, like, it goes to black and white, and we're supposed to be seeing, like, behind-the-scenes footage that some documentarian is capturing. The problem is that it doesn't feel like – it feels more like just like a movie, and they just put it in black and white. There's no there's no frenetic camera work where it's, like, you feel like someone's scrambling to capture – like, you know, when you watch a documentary, and you're, like – you feel like there's, like, a, you know, a handheld. You feel like somebody's trying to capture, you know
– yeah.
This moment that they're not
– real footage, yeah.
Somebody's in the way distance. And you like the camera's zooming in or trying to listen in on what, you know, all that stuff. It doesn't feel like that. And so it feels like they were the filmmakers were a little bit too nervous to go commit 100% to the premise, to the or the gimmick. There's a movie that I've talked about before on the podcast. I'll talk about it again. I really think you should all see it. It's called WNUF Halloween Special. And the premise of that movie is it's as if you found a video cassette of a local news report on Halloween that like or a reporter goes to do a haunted house, you know, a special at a haunted house. Right. And it's got fake commercials. It's got a fake news lead in where these two like news anchors are talking about Halloween and the dentist, and they're dressed up as like monsters. It's like Dracula, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It sticks to the premise for good or for bad all the way through. So, and the filmmakers know that you're going to get annoyed with the fake commercial. So at one point they just start fast forwarding it and just see it fast forward. It's really funny, but it never lets you know. It never goes, hey guys, we're just making a movie. I mean, you know, you're watching a movie, you know, but like it really stays in character, so to speak. Whereas Late Night with the Devil has moments where it doesn't. And that's where I kind of felt like, I was like, I wish you would just kind of committed to the premise, committed to the idea of like, we're watching this archival footage. That being said, I loved it. I thought it was so much fun. I know about the artwork and the AI and stuff. And that's sad. And like some of the special effects in the movie that like, I was like, I wish you hadn't done that, because you didn't need to do it. You were building a creepy vibe as is. You didn't need a lot of special effects, but whatever. I really strongly recommend it. It's one of my favorites of the year so far. I saw Dune Part 2, which I have a million thoughts about, mostly because I read the book. And I know everybody's like, oh, but it's so faithful to the book. It's not entirely faithful to the book, just like the David Lynch one isn't. The one thing I will say about...
No. Yeah, he had like a Villeneuve.
Yeah.
He had mentioned that he took some liberties to explain some of the characters that he thought that the book didn't really give a very clear translation about, or that like most people who read it got it wrong. So I knew that he had changed it without reading it, because I read those articles.
Or he left out characters, but he also changed, like, the character Austin Butler plays. He changes, and it's not a bad change.
Yeah, I heard he changed like his physical liberties from like how he's described in the book.
Yeah, the book he's described as an attractive young, you know, man who's a sociopath and a psychopath. But the point is this: is that like, he also kind of jumps the gun. He portrays the lead character. I don't know if it's Timothée Chalamet, or I don't know if it's just the way it was written, but like at the end of the book, have you seen Dune Part 2?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. At the end of the book of Dune, like, Paul Atreides is still a good guy. He's a complicated guy, but he's still likable. Let me put this, maybe not a good guy, but he's still likable. There's a very pivotal moment that was cut out of the Villeneuve version, mostly because they cut out the character in the second part that of his old mentor, who they have an exchange at the end of the book that you just, it warms your heart. You're like, yeah, like he still loves this guy. And he basically is like, look, if whatever you need for all the years that you've been in service for my family, whatever you need, it's yours. So if you need my life, you can take it. Cause they basically, I think it was the Emperor or Fade hands through for Howard a knife. And he's like, you get close enough, get him. And
yeah.
And Paul knows this. And he's like, he turns his back. He's like, I mean this, you can have my life. If it'll save yours, you can have mine. And by taking that out of the book, the movie, you go, oh, well, what do you know? Like he comes off as, it's like, oh, he turns out to be the villain at the end. Remember how you felt about the end of Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't have a problem with it, but I did have a problem with it.
Only
in the sense of like that, the outcome made sense. The journey didn't. Does that make any sense? Or it's like, oh,
okay, yeah.
Where she becomes this corrupted, her power ends up corrupting her, and she becomes vengeful and all this stuff. I understood that. I just didn't like that I felt like they could have set it up better. Same thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were taking elements of Paul Atreides from the other books in Dune Part 2.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
I hate to break the spoiler alert, everybody. Paul Atreides still doesn't end up being a villain. But the whole idea that Herbert was trying to go with is that heroes are complicated.
Ultimately corrupts, you know.
Hero worship is dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't know if Timothée Chalamet just doesn't have, and I feel like, you know, it sounds like a dick, but doesn't have the depth to play a character. You can go, oh, I like him, but I don't like him at the same time. Because at the end of the movie, I was like, I fucking hate this guy. And I just, you know what I mean? And that's not how I wanted
to. Yeah.
And again, like, it's about complicated people. Now, I will say this about Villeneuve. His movie looks beautiful. But
yeah,
David Lynch's movie, I feel connected more emotionally. Like there's stuff that I feel emotionally more drawn to in David Lynch's version. And it's funny to me because they're both working off the same material, right? But you can clearly mm-hmm. tell what appealed to either both directors. For David Lynch, it was the mysticism. It was the, oh, it's basically this guy who's expanding his consciousness and becoming this like higher being. And for Villeneuve, it's like the idea of like how religions and prophecies and all this stuff are planted, are created, are fabricated, and they're planted, and the idea of like he becomes,
and how powerful that feeling is to be, you know, even if you don't believe it. Yeah, it's like
exactly
very interesting. Yeah,
and here's the thing is that neither of them are wrong. It's just that they're but both kind of created different movies. Like in the David Lynch movie, it's they don't do the, he's like no, he's the chosen one. That's
yeah.
what it goes with. It's not like a, you know, there's no complication. There's no weird, like, you know, criticism.
But I like that in his version that he did that with Zendaya's character, where she was kind of like the anti, where she was just like, no, you're not a god. You know, you're a person.
And I think what I like about Villeneuve's Dune, because at first when I walked out, I was like, I fucking didn't like it. And then I thought about it. I was like, I liked it a lot. I really did. And they changed Zendaya's character. They make her a bigger, I mean, she's a big deal in the book, but like, I can tell you at the ending of the book and the ending that we got in part two is very different for her character.
Yeah.
That's fine. What I will say is this, is that both filmmakers made the Dune that needed to exist in its time period. I know Dune, David Lynch's Dune was a bomb, but it's like, you know why it bombed? Because Dino De Laurentiis and all the other producers, like, we want a Star Wars. You're not going to get a fucking Star Wars out of Dune. At all.
Yeah.
You know, like there were, I had Dune action figures. You know what I mean? Like I had them. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get that. It's not meant to be that, you know? So in Villeneuve's Dune is a Dune for this time period. Like it fits in this, in the sensibilities and the world that, you know, of our time, you know, I'm on board with it. It just, there's a little, it lacked emotion for me. And that's one thing that I wanted to feel something for somebody. You know?
Yeah.
And I didn't. So
okay. I can see that. That's, you know, like,
yeah, this is my hot take on Dune
Part. I think I'll rewatch it because I like to, like, he puts so much, especially visually, in his movies that, like, I like to rewatch them. And so it's finally landed on rent, but I'm going to wait until it lands somewhere else so I can rewatch it because it's like $30 and I'm like, I'm not paying that. Yeah. But
the last thing I watched was last week, and it was Abigail.
Okay, yeah, I haven't really heard much about this, and like, I've heard people saying that they liked it. That's kind of it. I don't know anything about it. I don't know.
I like the Radio Silence dudes. I liked Ready or Not. I liked Scream 5 and 6.
I liked Ready or Not.
I like all three of those movies. I'm not saying, I wouldn't take any of those movies out for coffee or bowling or a slice of pie, but I like those movies, you know? I liked Abigail, same exact, I feel exactly the same way, where it's like, oh,
okay,
it was fun. I enjoyed it. There was parts that I didn't really like. I don't know what it is. And I know this is terrible. That actor that you love, cause I remember we watched, you made me, when we worked together, we had an overnight trip and when you made me watch, what was it, The Guest? Was that it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dan Stevens. Yeah,
I know. I don't get it. Like, I think he's fine, but like there are people, and I would include you. And I would include my wife to some extent that think he's like the bees. And they're like, oh, he's great. And I'm like, he's fine. He's okay. I think here's the thing about Abigail and Ready or Not is that both movies are better than they should be because their leads are so strong. I like Samara Weaving in Ready or Not. I like,
yeah,
I can't pronounce her name, or I can't remember. Was it Melissa Barrera? Is that, am I wrong?
From Scream?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like her in, Melissa Barrera. I really like her in Abigail. I think she's,
yeah.
And the movies are better. And then the girl who played Abigail is fucking awesome. She's great. Like, I don't want to give, it's kind of a remake of a Universal film. I don't want to give away what it is. It's a different, let me rewind that. It's a different interpretation of a Universal film, a wildly different interpretation. If you want a more accurate interpretation of that Universal film, there is a movie in the 90s called Nadja that you can watch, and it's pretty much a remake of that, of the other movie. That being said, I enjoyed it. I had fun. I bought the ticket, took the ride, I got off, and I was like, okay, great, and I can move on with my life. And that's how I felt about Abigail.
Okay, interesting. It's one of those.
It's a good movie. It's fun. It's just, it's not going to... Late Night with the Devil, I can see myself at some point owning. I would love to have it on my shelf at some point to watch whenever, you know, when the whole world internet collapses and we're stuck without streaming, which is great. I'm looking forward to it. I'll have Late Night with the Devil. Abigail's not one of them.
Okay, I feel that. One that you're not mad that you saw, but, you know, you don't have to ever see again.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I like those guys. I think I feel confident. Like when they were announced to be behind the Escape from New York, hopefully it's a requel.
Oh, I don't know. I think like the minute I heard that, my mind just went blank. I was like, don't care. Don't want it.
I do not want an Escape from New York remake, reboot, requel, anything. I do not want that. But if the machine is going to be happening with or without you, these guys I feel confident about. Like when they were going to do it with, when they were going to do it with, what the fuck is his name? He's Jesus Christ. He was in Dracula 2000. He was in 300. What the fuck is his name? The actor.
Gerard Butler?
Gerard Butler. He was going to play Snake Plissken. This was like in like mid 2000s.
Okay. I mean.
That is the worst idea ever to me.
I can see it, I guess, but I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway,
that's so fun.
Moving on. We did a different movie. I feel like it's time to kind of segue into our.
It's funny because I've seen this as a child, and then now watching it through an adult lens, it's totally ridiculous.
Yep.
But I was like really afraid of dolls when I was younger because you had like a movie like this and you had Chucky, you know, that looked exactly like the My Buddy and the My Kid Sister dolls, I've never liked porcelain dolls. Mm. And so we obviously did the movie Dolls. I actually have a porcelain doll, and it's funny because this is something that my grandma bought me when I was born. And when she passed away, my mom was like, oh, she had it in her house. Do you want it? And I was like, no. I don't, but they like forced me to take it. And I have this doll sitting in my fucking closet. And I think about it all the time because I know it's there. I'm like hyper-focused on knowing it's there. It hasn't killed me yet, but I know it's there.
Maybe it's
do you want to give the synopsis?
I do want to point out something real quickly is that you and I texted you about, you know, cause you know, we live in different times now, we have to negotiate. And I was like, hey, do you want to do this movie? I remember you texted me back saying, oh man, it scared me as a kid. I thought I texted you this back. But apparently I didn't, I don't think it will this time. I stand by that. We watch Dolls. So Dolls centers on a little girl named Judy. She's with her family, her dad and her stepmom, her evil stepmom. And they're driving through Europe and their car breaks down inside this house. They go inside. The two owners are they're elderly and they're doll makers. While there's an American guy who is traveling and he picked up these two British punk hitchhikers and they're stranded there. So all these people are stranded in this house. And obviously there's at least one, there's definitely two people that are decent people. The rest of them kind of suck and they will get their comeuppance at the hands of these titular dolls.
Yeah. And it's funny because the father, you know, the family, which is like a stepmom, the father and the little girl. And I was like, that's such a fucking dick. Like, I don't even remember. Like, I don't remember half of it. I just remember the dolls killing people. But I was like, man, the dad's a dick. And it's so funny because I feel like this is stuff that I would do as an adult. This is why I don't have children. But like, there's a scene where like they're outside and the car's stuck in the mud and like, he's trying to do something with the tire and the little girl's like, dad, dad, dad. And instead of saying anything, he just hits the window.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, what a piece of shit. And so I did get a crack out of the dad because I thought it was pretty funny. He also says something like really stupid that like, when they're trying to get into this house that's like looks like it might be abandoned, you know, they sneak in through like the underside, like a bulkhead. And I was like, that's scary. I would definitely not do that. But then it starts raining and you're like, okay, that's what pushes them over it. But the stepmom is talking and like she was like, I suppose this, and he's like, I suppose you shut up. And then she's like, what? And he's like, oh, I suppose they shut up the house, you know, because of the storm or something. Yeah. And I thought it was really funny. I was like, God, these fucking step parents and his the father is like, what a fucking cocksucker.
It's funny because I mean, like,
in the worst way. Yeah.
If I have a problem with this movie, which I, you know, I enjoy this movie a lot, and I'll get into that in a second. But if I have a problem,
it was way more silly than
these characters are so fucking over the top. It's absurd. That being said, one of the reasons why I went to this movie is because it is directed by Stuart Gordon.
The great
Stuart Gordon, who obviously did Reanimator, and he also did another movie that we did cover on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
From Beyond.
Which is funny because I read that this was the same set as From Beyond. Or one of the same sets.
So one of the other, another reason why I wanted to cover Dolls is because it is a film that was made under the Empire Pictures banner. Empire Pictures was owned by Charles Band. Charles Band, who ends up now runs Full Moon Features. He's behind the Puppet Master series, all these movies that you've heard of, and you love Subspecies, all that. Charles Band owned a studio in Europe. I believe it was in Italy. So all of the Empire films were shot in Italy. It was cheaper. He had his own studio. Terrorvision, which we did watch.
I was just talking about Terrorvision.
Also, an Empire film, you know. And the funny thing about Terrorvision and Dolls is that as a lot of movies in the Empire Films banner did, it started off with a poster before it started off with a script, because that's how he would sell the movie. So Terrorvision starts off with the. I mean, that's why if you look at the movie for the poster for Terrorvision, you're like, okay, that's cool. Where does this movie in the film? Like, where is this? Dolls actually,
yeah.
Well, has a moment where you go, oh, that's what they got that from the poster. But he creates the poster and he shows it to Ed Naha, who is the screenwriter. And Ed Naha's like, what do I need to know about this movie? He's like, it's about a killer doll. And then Ed Naha was like, well, can it be about killer dolls? And he's like, yep. Done. And that was it. And that's how the movie got written. And Stuart Gordon was prepping to do From Beyond. He was doing it for Empire. And Charlie Band was like, oh, by the way, before you do From Beyond, I want you to do this other movie. It'll be easy. You'll knock it out in a few weeks. Yada, yada. Because these movies were made pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so even though he made Dolls before From Beyond, it didn't come out until after From Beyond, which is weird. Mm-hmm. From Beyond was 86. Dolls was 87. You know, here's the thing. I like this movie. I enjoy it. I get a kick out of it. For a long time, it was always like, you can see me, but obviously the listeners can't. It was always like here for me, which is like
mid.
But I enjoyed it. And then last year at the Arrow, when they did their horrorthon, you didn't know what they were going to be playing until literally the minute before they started playing it. And when they announced the first movie is Dolls, I was like, okay, but seeing that movie with a crowd makes it go from here to here. You go like, oh man, this movie's just fun. You know, the crowd really gets into it. Like they get into like the all the campiness, the ridiculous, like the over the top, evil stepmother. It's a fairy tale. I mean, at the end of the day, this movie's about like being young at heart and still holding on to that part of your childhood that like you believe in magic. You know, obviously the mm-hmm. elderly couple are witches. And the only other likable character in this is a guy named Ralph, who is like the bumbling American who comes in with these two hitchhikers. But I think there's a great moment in this movie that I go, oh, that's what this movie's about. Where like the little girl, Judy, has just seen the dolls drag this one girl off in a bloody mess. And she goes, you know, obviously her parents don't believe her mom and her dad and his stepmom don't believe her. So she goes to Ralph. And the first thing she asks him is, do you believe what kids tell you? And he's like, sure, I guess. And it's like, that's what the movie's about. It's about still, you know, and I, in that regard, there's something really charming about it that I really kind of love. And then Ralph, you know, he has a moment where he's talking to the toy maker about like when he was a kid and all the toys that he has and how he remembers them all. And, you know, the old man is like, well, they remember you too. And it's like, there is a sweetness to this movie. But yes, it is a fairy tale about
It is, because especially when I was younger, The Velveteen Rabbit was like my favorite book, which damaged my, like, I think I had my stuffed animal until I was in my mid-20s. And you know, like, I'm one of those people that like, I'm like, I know I don't believe this, but like there might be a little bit. And so I think when I saw this movie as a child, like there's a part where all the dolls are like, they're stabbing the stepmom and like biting her. Yeah. And I'm like, what the fuck? They're like stabbing her in the foot. Like, okay, that I would have seen as a kid and it would have terrorized me for forever. Cause I saw Cat's Eye also when I was in kindergarten and I was convinced that there was trolls in the walls and that we needed a cat to get rid of them. Right. So like, I was very open to what movies said to me at the time.
Right. No, I agree. And like, and also like, you know, she's literally reading Hansel and Gretel in the backseat of the car, you know?
I know. And her name is Judy. And the doll she has is Mr. Punch. And I was like, oh, Punch and Judy.
I think that's kind of my like, why it was always been here is because I'm like, man, that's
blatant.
Yeah. But again, I enjoy it because there are moments that are like, the tone's a little weird. It is. Like,
it's also like, and I get it too, because the first thing I think, and it's funny, the reaction between Ralph and the dad, where like, he has the little girl and he's like trying to get people to believe her. And then he's like, what are you doing? Like, you're a pervert. Yeah. Like, stay away from my daughter, which is like cringy, but it's also something that like, I think as adults, we would automatically think. It's like, what's wrong with you if right. you are taking her word for it? And what are you doing with her type of thing? Which is, I don't even know. Yeah. Like, it's very strange.
And I think about that. Like, I think about like J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, and how like people like, you know, cause he became friends with these kids and people questioned, they're like, what are you doing with these kids? And he's like, why does everything have to have a sinister connotation?
And because that's how the world is. Look at that fucking dude, Dan Stevens from Nickelodeon.
Dan Schneider.
Dan Schneider. I did.
I was like, look,
different guy, guys. Yeah.
That's dangerous. No, I get that. And I understand that. And I understand. I'm not arguing that like mentality of like, you know, immediately kind of like thinking like, oh, something bad. But it's like, you know, it was just Jane Barry was kind of like, why can't things just be pure and innocent and good? And I think that's one of the things I like about Dolls is that it's still trying to kind of like go back to that.
I like that the dolls were pragmatic in it. Like, there was a moment where, like, the dolls were listening to the child, and they're like, oh, okay, maybe we should rethink this murder thing for this guy and, like, let them go. Right. I kind of thought it's pretty funny. They are, like, I hate their little faces. It's very, because you assume that there's something empty beside, and I do like that Stuart Gordon did this, where, like, he put, like, a little doll skeleton, so they're, like, little beings in them, which is kind of funny, because it goes along with, like, the witch grandparents like shrinking down humans into being dolls, like they're like weird human dolls, which is creepy in itself.
Sure. And I also like that, like, what I was saying about the tone of the movie is that like, it for a movie that's kind of goofy and you know, and kind of like a, you know what, I just realized a better way to describe this movie, the tone of this, the guy who wrote it, Ed Nahop, also wrote the other Empire film, Troll, the original Troll, which was the first.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, that's what these movies are.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But there's a really, I genuinely think this is like a creepy moment. I can't, there's a part where Ralph and Judy are upstairs in this attic, and Isabel, who's like one punk rocker, the one that gets dragged away. There's a doll version of her up in the attic, and they don't notice her. She's sitting in a chair, and they're talking, and she's moving. And she's, you know, of course, later on in the movie, she'll be the one that holds the eyes up to the. To
her. Yeah. And, I mean, I like that scene. It's creepy.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. I like it too. And it's just like, wow, what is this genuinely terrifying moment doing in such a goofy movie, you know? And again, sensibilities are different. I'm sure there's part people who were scared when the stepmother gets killed. I wasn't. I was like, eh.
I mean, they had it coming. Let's say the dad and the stepmom had it coming for sure.
So,
I mean, the girls, like, they just were trying to steal some shit, but, you know.
I wanted to talk about that, too. So let's talk about the stepmom and the dad. So the stepmom is played by Carolyn Purdy Gordon, who is Stuart Gordon's wife. Obviously, no longer.
Oh, that's funny. That makes a lot of sense, then.
And she always shows up in his movies, and she's always playing a bitchy character. And I watched an interview with her. She's like, yeah, I like playing these characters. It's a good outlet for me to get it out of my system. I was like, that makes sense. The guy, the father, is played by Ian Patrick Williams. He shows up in Reanimator. He shows up in Terrorvision as a cop. And obviously he shows up here. And both Ian Patrick Williams and Carolyn Purdy Gordon were part of Stuart Gordon's theater company in Chicago, the Organic Theater, where they would do these crazy plays where they did like Peter Pan, where everybody was naked on stage. stuff like that. And so obviously when he started moving from theater to film, they moved along with him. And, you know, They worked, like, you know, again, Carolyn Party Gordon was in so many of Stuart Gordon's films. Stephen Lee plays Ralph. I remember him from RoboCop 2, which is a hot garbage of a movie, but he plays a rat who ends up getting killed. But he's so likable in this movie. Like, he reminds me of Sean Astin now before.
I wrote that down because I was like, I know Sean Astin was like, what, 12 when this movie was made or some shit like that. You know, he was not old enough. But I was like, wow, major Sean Astin vibes here.
Right. Okay. And like, and the problem is that I think he kind of like, anytime the movie goes into the direction of being like ridiculous and campy, I think Stephen Lee kind of takes it and runs with it. You know, like he kind of he forces it along. You know, so like there's a moment where he, like, you know, at the end of the movie when he like he wakes up and he's like, the killer dolls, and you're like, oh dear.
But also these gaslighting ass like witches that are like, no, that didn't happen. Everyone's gone, but that didn't happen.
I'm not criticizing Stephen Lee's acting. I really like it. I think he just, anytime the movie's kind of like constantly going back and forth tone wise.
Yeah,
I think he's certainly on one side of it. But Guy Rolfe plays the older man. Mm-hmm. I recognize him from, he was in a William Castle movie called Mr. Sardonicus. Mr. Sardonicus, the gimmick behind that William Castle film is at the end of the movie, you had a card you held up and it thumbs up or thumbs down. You get to decide the villain's fate. Does he get away with the crime? And they only ever filmed one ending. But they always had William Castle being like, doing like a count of like all the different
thumbs up,
you know, or thumbs down. That's, I mean, really funny. And it's like, clever. They only shot one ending. But he was the lead in that. He's also in King of Kings, you know, which is, mm-hmm, like biblical epic. He also is in other epic films like Puppet Master 3, 4, 5, and Retro Puppet Master. his wife in the movie, Hillary Mason. I think the most famous thing I've ever seen her in is Don't Look Now.
Interesting.
With Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie. And she also shows up in a movie called Meridian. Now, Meridian and all the Puppet Master movies are all Full Moon features. So Charles Band clearly, you know, liked working with them.
Kept using them.
All right, so Isabel, the one who gets dragged away, who gets turned
into her career.
Yeah, she's played by Bunty Bailey. And
I saw her name and I was like, what kind of fucking name is Bunty? But anyway.
What is she most famous for? She's most famous for being the girl in the Take On Me video by A-ha.
Hey, listen, I really like A-ha.
I do.
I will say. So I was like, I got to rewatch that video and see her in it because, you know, I've been like going through their discography and I was like, I really like them a little bit more than I think I did, you know, when I was like a young adult.
They got one of the top three Bond songs as far as I'm concerned. Cassie Stewart plays her friend. The other punk rock girl, she has a career in television, in British television.
Did they deserve to be dolls forever? I don't know. The parents definitely did.
Fuck yeah. They're coming in, they're going to rob these fucking old people who are giving them shelter. Fuck that shit. Fuck yeah. That's the least that happens to them. And then I don't want to forget Carrie Lorraine, who plays Judy, who actually is the whole movie. The whole movie rides on her, and I think she handles it really well. She was also in an episode of ALF, and she's in Poltergeist too. But I think she's, the little girl is fantastic.
No, she was. She really was. She was like, I don't know, some kids suck, but like she was believable enough. And like you felt bad for her character because you're like, all she wants to do is talk about stories. And her dad's like, shut up. Yeah. Stop talking about stories.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, she's just a little kid.
It was written by a guy named Ed Naha, who, like I said, he wrote Troll. He wrote this. He also wrote with Stuart Gordon a movie called Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I love that one.
Stuart Gordon.
It was like one of the first ones I saw in the movie theater. Like, I remember my like tiny little brain.
Well, you know what's weird is I remember Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I remember that was a movie they showed in our school. Like once every few months in our elementary school, they had a movie night where you'd, you know, like where it was after hours and you could go watch a movie in the auditorium. They would have like a projector, and I don't know if it was like a projector that was hooked up to a video or what. But I remember one of them was DuckTales, the movie.
DuckTales, woo!
And the other one was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I remember seeing both those in school. He also wrote Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
Oh, that's That's funny.
I also, because his name always stands out to me because he wrote a behind the scenes, a making of book about David Lynch's Dune. So that's what I always thought. That's what I always thought, he was just a guy who wrote novelizations, wrote about movies. It wasn't until I was older, I was like, oh, he actually wrote movies as well. He wrote two films with Roger Corman, but I have read an interview with him in Fangoria where he did not have a good time doing that, whereas he felt he was treated with respect working for Empire Pictures because in the case of Troll, John Buechler, who was a special effects or makeup effects artist, monster effects guy, he also directed Troll. And I remember he would like hearing that he would go to Edna Hahn and be like, hey, do you mind if I make this change or do this or do that? And he's like, what? Nobody asks to do that. They just do it, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Funny story about this movie. You had mentioned earlier about being afraid of dolls, killer dolls. You mentioned Chucky. While this movie's being made or being written, Edna Hahn gets a phone call from Tom Holland. Not Tom Holland Spider-Man, but Tom Holland, the director of movies as Fright Night and Child's Play. And he called him because he's like, hey, I heard you're making a killer doll movie. I'm also making a killer doll movie. I'm worried that these two killer doll movies might be whatever. They had a very pleasant conversation and realized that both their movies were complete opposites.
Different.
But I just thought it was interesting that, like, all right, so let's go back. We got, in the 60s, we got the Twilight Zone. We got Talkie Tina, right? The little doll who kills Kelly Savalas. Okay. I know there was one in Dead of Night in the 40s, but I'm thinking, like, you know, modern or around the time this movie gets made. So we get Talkie Tina in the 60s. In the 70s, we get Magic with Anthony Hopkins and the ventriloquist dummy.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of it in the 80s. By the time Dolls comes out or Child's Play, how many killer dolls? I mean, I feel like now it's like killer doll movies are, you know, we've got, a lot of them are Charles Band influenced, like the Puppet Master series, which he was his baby. Isn't there an Imaginary Friend movie that's about killer dolls, killer imaginary animals, right? Didn't it just come out? Blumhouse put it out.
Oh, there was Megan. That's a killer doll movie.
There you go. Exactly. It's like, but in the 80s, it was such a rarity that a director of one movie had to call the writer of another movie and be like, hey, guy, I'm just worried that we might be crossing streams here. And it's like, yeah, nobody would do that now. Nobody would think about that. Like, I mean,
no, they would just barrel all over each other just for spite.
They wouldn't even make the same fucking movie, you know? So.
No, that is funny. And that's probably why it was so scary to me as a kid, because for some reason, I think there's always something about dolls that felt a little alive. And then when you put a horror tinge on it, even as silly as this movie Dolls is, it still terrorized me as a child, because I was like, they have little knives. Like, they're going to stab me and bite me in my sleep, you know?
Well, yeah.
So, but I've watching it now, it's very silly, but I totally enjoyed it.
Well, it's funny because I remember as a kid, the video, the VHS box of this with the doll holding the
it looks scary.
And on the back, the shot of Bunty Bailey holding her hand up, and she's covered in blood. There was something about that picture of her reaching out that looked like, I feel terrible saying this, looked like the Garbage Pails Kids movie. And I remember being creeped out by that movie as well. So for me, this video was, I feel like the VHS cover art and the back of the box was far more scarier than
was enough.
Yeah. But again, I still enjoy it. I recommend if you can see with a crowd or you have people over, it's a fun watch. People get into it. People they gasp at the same parts that are actually creepy, and they kind of have a ball with how ludicrous the movie can be. That's my hot take on Dolls.
Yeah, no, it's totally watchable. It's on Tubi, which still has a lot of horror movies on it, especially old campy ones like this one. I feel like it's worth seeing. It's fun. It's super fun. Like you said, probably would be a good, friend movie, to have something once, something silly.
I think along with, I think the two best things that Stuart Gordon's ever done, as far as I'm concerned, or, is Reanimator and From Beyond. And then Dagon, which he makes later on, the early 2000s. That's great too. I think the reason why I like those movies better than I think work better than Dolls is because there's a little bit of the perverse in Reanimator and from, well, there's definitely in Reanimator and definitely.
Oh yeah.
And I think there's also the perversity, and there's also the kind of enjoying it and like get, you know, and getting a kick out of being that, like, you know, like the scene in Reanimator with the fucking severed head. I think when Stuart Gordon kind of indulge in his like weird shit and have fun with it, it creates a better product than, you know, than something like Dolls or he did what did he do? Cellar Dweller is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, this is nowhere near one of his best films.
Castle Freak was his movie, not Cellar Dweller. Castle Freak, which is, you know, got Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Gordon. But anyway, yeah, I agree. It's not his best, but it's pretty damn good. It's fun.
Yeah, it's a fun watch. Like, I'm not upset I watched it. It's very silly, and I had a few laughs. For sure.
So you weren't that was important.
No, it did make me a little like nostalgic, you know, in a way of like being a kid and then like seeing how silly some of these movies are when you're an adult and you're like, oh, maybe like my imagination just like really took over, you know, and that kind of thing I miss. But no, it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can enjoy it too. Tubi, guys.
Tubi, Arrow Video has got a great box set called the, you know, Empire Pictures box set. Check it out. But yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Come on.
Let's
get going.
It looked like a safe haven from the raging storm.
It's an odd kind of place. Folks get it from Boris Karloff.
Their hosts seemed like the essence of hospitality.
You can stay here as long as you like.
Wonderful.
But appearances can be very deceiving.
What's the matter? Afraid of the dog?
Boss, yeah? Are you scared?
Well, of course not. What's there to be afraid of?
This house?
Oh, don't be.
I'm a doll maker. I make the most wonderful toys. Dolls, puppets, soldiers, ballerinas. Nobody wants a doll that's special anymore, that's one of a kind. The way that brings out creativity, it helps me in my work.
What kind of work is that? Witchcraft?
Play with dolls until you're dead. Dolls.